Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3, Text 30. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Etad Rupam Bhagavato. Ya rupasya chiratmanam maya guna virajitam mahadadi viratmani. Translation: the conception of the Virat universal form of the Lord as appearing in the material world is imaginary. It is to enable the less intelligent and neophytes to adjust to the idea of the Lord's having form. But factually, the Lord has no material form. Purport: the conception of the Lord known as the Vishvarup or the Virat Rup is particularly not mentioned along with the various incarnations of the Lord, because all the incarnations of the Lord mentioned above are transcendental, and there is not a tinge of materialism in their bodies. There is no difference between the body and self, as there is in the conditioned soul. The Virat Rupa is conceived for those who are just neophyte worshippers. For them, the material Virat Rupa is presented, and it will be explained in the second canto. In the Virat Rupa, the material manifestation of different planets have been conceived as his legs, hands, etc. Actually, all such descriptions are for the neophytes. The neophytes cannot conceive of anything beyond matter. The material conception of the Lord is not counted in the list of his factual forms. As Paramatma or Supersoul, the Lord is within each and every material form, even within the atoms. But the outward material form is both an imagination, both for the Lord and the living being. The present forms of the conditioned souls are also not factual. The conclusion is that the material conception of the body of the Lord as Virat is imaginary. Both the Lord and the living beings as spirit souls are living spirits and have original spiritual bodies. Om Jnanate Marandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmalatam yena tasmai sri gurave namaha. Sri chaitanya manobhishtam tapitam yena bhutale shayam rupakadhamayam tadati svapadantikam pancha kalpa tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we have just completed the section about the Lord's incarnations. And the last verse described that whoever recites the mysterious appearances of the Lord with devotion in the morning and in the evening gets relief from all miseries of life. So this is the purpose of the Srimad Bhagavatam, to give us relief, vimuchite in the previous verse, liberation or relief from the suffering of the material world due to our rebelling against our eternal nature or our dharma or duty as a servant of Krishna. So the incarnations were mentioned. And then among the incarnations, the position of Krishna was clearly delineated as Swayam Bhagavan, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this was discussed very, very clearly, especially in the commentaries of Srila Jiva Goswami. So this is about incarnations and the value and purpose and result of worshipping them. The whole Srimad Bhagavatam is based on describing the Lord's appearance and the effect of proper meditation and understanding of the Supreme Lord. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvataha tyaktvadeham punajanmam naiti mam eti surjana. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvataha. That when you understand janma karma chame divyam, that the Supreme Lord's appearance is not analogous to the appearance of the living entity in the material world, although there are similarities in the sense that they have mother and father and they both take birth at an apparently particular time. The Supreme Lord's birth, divyam, is transcendental. It has nothing to do with this material world or the laws. It's not subject to the laws of this material world. Either are his activities, his karma, his work, which although have the form of activities in the material world in many occasions, they're completely distinct and transcendental. So tatvataha, understanding in truth about the Lord as he appears in this material world. Now the question that's going to be discussed in the next few verses is a discussion of a form of the Lord called the Virat Rupa, which will be described later on several times in the Bhagavatam. Virat means the universe, so the universal form of the Supreme Lord. And the discussion will be whether or not this particular form is also an incarnation. Is it transcendental? Because if it is transcendental, then our meditation on that form, we should also recite the appearance of that form and get relief from the miseries of material life. But if it's not transcendental, then it's not for our meditation. And will not have the same results as meditating on the Lord's transcendental form. So here this question arises. Is the Lord's Virat Rupa also an incarnation? And the answer is given here in this verse. First of all, I should explain what the Virat Rupa is. The Virat Rupa is the description of the universe as the body of the Lord. The eyes and the sun and the moon are his eyes. The rivers are his veins. The trees are his hair. There's an elaborate description, and that description is also given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, what is this conception as it appears in the material world? And here it's given that it's not actually the Lord's form, but it is a an imagination. It's an imagination. And the analogy is going to be made in these next verses. Just as it's an imagination, although there's some connection in one sense, just as it's an imagination to think that the material body is the self, it's an imagination to think that the universe is actually God's form. Although there's a connection, just like the self animates the body, when God, as was described in previous verses also, in terms of Garbo Dakashai Vishnu, described at the end of the second chapter and the beginning of the third chapter, that as the Lord expands into this universe, first he expands the material elements and then he animates them, or he animates the universes by entering into the universes as Garbo Dakashai Vishnu. And as we'll see, there's a certain identification of thought you can get by the external appearance of something. I may have to just lecture on this and then read the verses, as Prabhupada will explain in the next verse. If the president comes in a car, you can look, you may not see the president, the car may have these windshields that are very, very dark. The windows, excuse me, may be very, you know, tinted. You may not, but if you know it's the president's car, you'll say, "Here comes the president." So you'll be thinking of the president. So in the same way, although the universe is not the Supreme Lord, but because it's an outer manifestation of this, or as a Supreme Lord comes into the universe and animates the universe, so to speak, that by looking at the universe in relationship to God, there's some type of purification. It's not meant for us who have come to the point in the Srimad Bhagavatam of understanding Etai Cham Sakala Pumsa Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. And in fact, in the second canto, when this is described, it's described and it says beyond the universe is actually God. So we should actually worship God. We should actually worship Krishna. We should worship Vrajendranandana Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond the universe. As it's said here, and Prabhupada says in the purport, you know, all the incarnations of the Lord mention a transcendental, and there's not a tinge of materialism in their body. There's no difference between their body and the self. When you see the form of Krishna, or you see the form of Nrisimha, you see the form of Vamana, or you see the form of Varaha, there's no difference between their body and their self. Again, there's not that duality. But Prabhupada says, the material conception of the Lord is not counted in the list of his factual forms. As Paramatma or Supersoul, the Lord is within each and every material form, even within the atoms. But the outward material form is but an imagination, both for the Lord and for the living entities. So the analogy is there to help us understand this Bharat Rupa. It's just like the soul and the body. It's not the self. The conclusion is that the material conception of the body of the Lord is imaginary. Both the Lord and the living beings are living spirits and have original spiritual bodies. So this is a form, and this is a way of meditating. But for neophytes whose conception of greatness is in terms of matter. We discussed this before. Or for impersonalists who don't have any bhakti or devotion and have no personal conception. So if somehow they can begin meditating on the universe and start thinking in terms of its personal conception, that will help them to develop devotion within their hearts. It's like you could say, here comes the president, just see his car, but if you're thinking of the president, or if you're thinking that he has a form, then there's some advancement. So it's not an incarnation. There's no connection between the Virat Rupa and the Lord. Now, for the materialistic person, the Virat Rupa brings devotion because one understands that the Lord is great and I am insignificant. And therefore, when you see that the Lord is great, he is lightning, he is mountain. For a materialistic person, lightning, a tiger, mountains, you know, it's awe-inspiring. It helps him to understand that he's not God. Both the impersonalist and the materialist think they're God. So the materialist has this, but when you become humbled by the power of the Lord. And what is the universal form? It's described in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, just with a spark of my splendor, I pervade this complete universe. So just a fraction of the Lord's potency pervades this whole universe, manifests this whole universe. And therefore within the universe, the Lord is existing. And therefore one could actually see that with transcendental eyes. You know, his many heads, his many arms, all the, you know, because it's actually a fact, the Lord is pervading everything. So this humbles one. And I have a personal example myself when I went to the Himalayas about 10, 15 years ago. Well, we went pretty high up to these wonderful ashrams, and it was breathtaking. And on the way back, it was just a winding road. We went the long way. And I had to stop the bus at some of the sites and get out and look out into the valleys and just see, you know, huge mountain range. The Himalayas, it's not just that you look up and it's high, but it's mountain peak and valley after mountain peak extending for hundreds and hundreds of miles, and you can see that. And you see huge trees and beautiful things, and I had a sense of devotion because of my current perspective and because of my ego. I was humbled. It actually helped me devotionally to see matter and see the splendorous manifestation of the material manifestation by Krishna. So this is the Virat Rupa. You have any questions?
Can you take it away? Because maybe they'll build.
Well, you can ask a question, Phil.
Well, you said all the incarnations, they have, they all have spiritual, all are all just on the spiritual platform?
Yes.
Then how do materialists even have the vision to see them? Because it says the first line in the next purport, it is further confirmed herein that with our material eyes and senses we cannot see the Lord, who is all spirit.
You can't see the Lord unless you become spiritualized.
And only by the Lord's will you'll become spiritualized?
Well, that's the whole process of devotional service. By your sincerity, you can become, you know, we've discussed the process. And then there's Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam. Otherwise, naham pakasya sarvasya yoga maya samavrita. I'm not manifest to the foolish and unintelligent.
I was remembering a pastime from Krishna book where Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram were wrestling in an arena. And I think that's when the different vision of the people.
That was when Krishna came to Mathura, when he was invited by Kamsa to the wrestling arena. So that's a very, very famous verse. According to people's relationship with them, in other words, according to people's qualification, they saw him. Different people, there was like 11 or 15 different types of visions of Krishna. You know, the parents saw him as their child, the gopis as their lover, the friends as their equal, Kamsa as death personified, the yogis as the super soul. Right, again, it's Advayam Gyan. It's one transcendental being. But according to our perspective and how we approach him, we view him. And even in the material world, that's the case even with material objects. According to our perspective and how we approach them, that's what we see. Take something like a snake. You know, some people like snakes, right? And some people are fearful of them. According to your modes of nature, you even see different. One person sees this type of music as beautiful, another doesn't like it at all. But that doesn't mean the object is different. Matter of fact,
I could hear it. So, according to this, the vision of the universal form is definitely lower than Krishna's transcendental form?
Of course.
So, when Yashoda saw the universe in Krishna's mouth, her vision was actually being lowered?
Yeah. Yeah, it was, of course, it was being lowered. Well, in one sense, she was seeing the universal form. She was seeing the whole universe within Krishna. What was lower is that she was seeing Krishna as God. She wasn't seeing the universal form necessarily. Yes, she was seeing the whole universe within Krishna, but she was seeing Krishna as God. And seeing Krishna as God is less of a realization than seeing Krishna as her son. We explained this before, that at home someone reveals his personality. In other words, to understand the personality of a person is greater than understanding the person's position. But Mother Yasoda, they also have some sense of Krishna's Aishwarya or greatness, and that also enhances their love. But it is predominated or covered by the madhurya or understanding of his personality and his sweetness.
When in the Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna is revealed the universal form,
you have to always speak louder because maybe people don't hear it. And then
in the Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna is revealed the universal form, his mind is still bothered, or you can see that he still has a material conception of life. So I think one time you told me that his vision, this sense perception was changed, but not his mental framework, or his mind wasn't changed. When someone sees Krishna, do they see with they don't see with the material mind?
To see Krishna, the mind is also senses. The mind is also a sense. Everything has to be purified. I think we'll go on. Text 31. Yatanam vasi megaho renurva partavo nale evam drastari jistyatvam aropitam abhuribhi. Clouds and dusts are carried by the air, but less intelligent persons say that the material sky is cloudy and the air is dirty. Similarly, they also implant material bodily conceptions on the spirit self. So this is an example to help us understand how identifying the outward conception as the self is just an imagination. Nice. You know, the sky is cloudy, or the air is dirty. So it gives us an example how we identify the outward manifestation as the self. But at the same sense, for materialists, by identifying the outward manifestation as Krishna, he's beginning to appreciate Krishna. if he sees some great material manifestation, identifies that as just part of Krishna, he's actually appreciating Krishna. So it helps make the materialist godly, and the impersonalist personalist or devotional. It makes the impersonalist devotional and the materialist godly. Purport, it is further confirmed herein that with our material eyes and senses we cannot see the Lord, who is all spirit. We cannot even detect the spiritual spark which exists within the material body of the living being. We look to the outward covering of the body or subtle mind of the living being, but we cannot see the spiritual spark within the body. So we have to accept the living being's presence by the presence of his gross body. So when you don't have the qualification, then you accept the presence of something by its gross manifestation. So materialists that don't have the qualification accept the presence of God by his gross manifestation. So similarly, those who want to see the Lord with their present material eyes, with their material senses, are advised to meditate on the gigantic external feature called the Virat Rupa. For instance, when a particular gentleman goes in his car, which can be very easily seen, we identify the car with the man within the car. When the president goes out in his particular car, we say, there is the president. For the time being, we identify the car with the president. Similarly, less intelligent men who want to see God immediately without necessary qualification are shown first the gigantic material cosmos as a form of the Lord, although the Lord is within, without. And I identify myself as the less intelligent person who saw God when I was in the Himalayas. So less intelligent people accept the presence of a person by his gross manifestation. The next verse.
Ata param yaravyaktam avyudaguna brimhitam adrishta shruta vastu tvat sajivo yat.
Beyond this gross conception of form is another subtle conception of form, which is without formal shape and is unseen, unheard, and unmanifest. The living being has his form beyond this subtlety, otherwise he could not have repeated births. So this analogy is being carried, but it's being described in terms of the living being. Because there is a similarity between the living being's relationship with his body and the Lord's relationship with the universal form. So here, as the living being has existence beyond the gross or subtle forms, in other words, beyond the gross conception of form, there's a subtle form, which is the mind, etc. So a living being has his form beyond this. Just as God has his form beyond the gross manifestation, which is matter, and the subtle manifestation, which is his energy. So similarly, the living entity has his... What's happening here is very interesting. It starts with a discussion of the incarnations to show that the Virat Rupa isn't an incarnation. Then shows us how we should see the Lord's relationship to the Virat Rupa. Now what's happening is Sutta Goswami is showing how that's so much analogous to how we should view the body in relationship to the self. And in that regard, he's going to have a little discussion here about self-realization, which means to see yourself beyond the body and to act beyond the body, but act as the self. Is that clear? What's happening here? I'm going to repeat it again. He began by discussing the Virat Rupa and the relationship between the Lord and the universe. There's an analogy between that. Just as the Lord is not the universe, similarly the soul is not the body. And to make those distinctions is self-realization. purport as the gross cosmic manifestation is conceived, this gigantic body of the Lord, so also there is the conception of his subtle form, which is simply realized without being seen, heard, or manifest. But in fact, all these gross or subtle conceptions of the body are in relationship with the living beings. The living being has his spiritual form beyond the gross material or subtle existence. And if he didn't, then as Prabhupada said, how can he repeat his births again and again? Whereas the body goes, but the self or the person still exists. The conclusion is that the Lord... Are you listening?
Yes.
The conclusion is that the Lord is eternally existent in his transcendental form, which is neither gross nor subtle like that of the living being. Just as the living being's form is not gross or subtle, it's not the body or the subtle body, so the Lord is eternally existent in his transcendental form, which is not Brahman, and it's not the material world. His body is never compared to the gross and subtle bodies of the living beings. Okay. Any questions?
I'm just wondering if...
Speak loudly, please.
I'm just wondering if my question will be answered in the next verses.
Okay. Okay, well, then we'll save for the end. Yatrame sarasadrupe prasidhe swasambhida avidyat avidyayatmani krite iti tad brahmadarsanam. Whenever a person experiences by self-realization that both the subtle, gross and subtle bodies have nothing to do with the pure self, at that time he sees himself as well as the Lord. So, Prabhupada, I'm going to read some of the purport. Self-realization means becoming indifferent to the needs of the gross and subtle bodies and becoming serious about the activities of the self. So, self-realization, when you experience... this is a little bit more like Gyan. When you stop acting according to the impulses of the body and mind, this is Jnana Yoga for a devotee. When you stop acting, this is by performing austerities, which means to, for a devotee, it means that we go on with devotional service despite the irrational impulses of the mind and body. So when we become indifferent, then we realize the self. Then we come in touch with our real identity. We realize the self. We experience the self. And when we experience the self, we also experience the Lord. Because when the living being experiences the self, what does he experience? He experiences the self that he's a servant of Krishna. He's not the enjoyer or the controller. And then he sees himself and naturally also sees Krishna. When you see yourself as a servant of Krishna, then you also see Krishna. So this is self-realization. When you simply spend your life surrendered or servant of the dictates of the mind and senses, then you don't experience the self, which is not the... When you follow the dictates of the mind and senses, what you're experiencing is the false ego. I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. You don't experience the self. So when you cease to become the servant of the mind and senses by incessant engagement in devotional service, then your real nature becomes manifest as a servant of God, and therefore you also see God. Yes.
Okay. The last two lines of the purport. I'll start in the middle. By his causeless mercy, he removes the living being's illusory curtain, and thus he realizes his own self, in the last sentence is, all this is executed by the Lord either through his external potency or directly by the internal potency.
Yeah.
So this is explaining how the Lord pulls the curtain?
That's described in the next verse.
Okay.
It's definitely described in the next verse. It's just interesting here. It's a very subtle point, but again, how by discussing the Virat Rupa and the relationship between the Virat Rupa and the Supreme Lord, which is analogous to the relationship of the living entity in the material body, now he's going to discuss a little bit about Jnana Yoga, or how by the proper conceptions and understanding of the body and the self, you can actually understand that you're a devotee of Krishna. This is described also in the second canto, how by sankhya or analysis or proper analysis you come to the understanding of the self and the super self. Yadyesho parata devi maya vesharadi mati sampana eveti vidur mahimni sve mahiyate. If the illusory energy subsides and the living entity becomes fully enriched with knowledge by the grace of the Lord, then he becomes at once enlightened with self-realization and thus becomes situated in his own glory. So if the living entity gets rid of the conception that I am this body, or this illusion or misinterpretation, then he becomes situated in his real glory. And what is his real glory? His real glory is that I am a servant of Krishna. So if we can get rid of this misconception, if it subsides by knowledge, by the grace of the Lord, then we become enlightened and self-realized. We understand the self. And we become situated in our own glory, and that's our glory. Our glory is not that we're the controller or the enjoyer. Our glory is that we're the servant of Krishna. Now, how is this done? It's said through the internal, or directly by the internal potency, or through the external potency. Prabhupada explains that in the purport. The same energy acts as his external, internal, and marginal energies, and by his omnipotency, he can perform anything and everything through the agency of any of the above energies. He can turn the external energy into internal by his will. Therefore, by his grace, the external energy, which is employed in illusioning those living beings who want to have it, subsides by the will of the Lord, in terms of repentance and penance for the conditioned soul. So the illusory energy, in terms of penance, repentance, when you actually feel sorry that I've forgotten you and I've become the enjoyer and the controller, when you actually begin to regret. See, we don't regret the position of the enjoyer controller, but rather we glorify that. And we become very happy when we're acting independent of God. We become very happy when we're controlling others and we get a position of dominance of others, or we raise our material prestige. We become very happy, but when we actually repent that we're acting as the controller and the enjoyer. When we repent that we're acting as the controller and the enjoyer, and then start performing austerity and start to perform devotional service sincerely despite the irrational impulses of the mind and the senses, then the Supreme Lord withdraws that external energy. And then we see the external energy is actually assisting our self-realization. Because we'll see what's ever coming to us is actually meant to bring us closer to Krishna. And that's a devotee's vision of the world. He sees that the material world is moving. Once you have some perspective and transcendental realization, you'll see that the material world is moving. See, when you want to be the enjoyer and the controller, then the material world is moving.
to, you know, you see the material world is moving. You see the material world moving around you for you to make you the enjoyer and the controller. But once you become a devotee, you'll see that it's moving actually to give you spiritual realization. Prabhupada says in the very same energy then acts to help the purified living being make progress on the path of self-realization. The example of electric energy is very appropriate in this connection. The expert electrician can utilize the electrical energy for both heating and cooling by adjustment only. Similarly, the external energy which now bewilders the living being into continuation of birth and death is turned into internal potency by the will of the Lord to lead the living being to eternal life. What's your question?
What is the Lord's or the Shudarsattva, and how does it affect one's vision and knowledge?
This is another question.
It's not in relation to this?
Not directly, I don't think, but at least I'm not understanding how it is directly.
I thought the Lord's, that energy of the Lord enters the heart of
it
the
does.
Living, and doesn't that, you know, have something to do with self-realization and recognizing one's position?
It's a little bit separate. This is talking about Jnana Yoga.
I thought Jnana Yoga only leads to Brahman realization.
Yeah.
Then how does that allow the living being to become situated in his own glory?
You may have theoretical understanding that you're not the body and you're the servant of Krishna. There's a form of liberation. There's another form of liberation where you actually get the direct sense of your identity of Krishna. There's one sense where you get a general sense of your identity of Krishna, that I am Krishna's servant. When Vishuddhasattva enters into the heart, what's awakened is the specific sense of your eternal relationship of Krishna in terms of your love, that, you know, I am Krishna's mother, I am Krishna's friend, I am Krishna's lover, I am Krishna's intimate servant. That's not exactly what's being discussed here. Exactly.
But if you're saying this is about Jnana Yoga?
Yes.
I thought in Brahman realization, you don't see yourself as serving Krishna.
Jnana Yoga means using your analytical abilities to become detached from the body so that you can become a servant of Krishna. Okay, that's what Jnana Yoga is. What you're talking about is Jnana. That's not Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga means when it's connected to devotional service. And that's described in some previous verses, which I can't find right now.
That would be Jnanmarg?
Yeah, Jnanmarg. Okay.
Evam janmani karmani yakatur ajanasya cha Varnayanti sma kavayo vedaguyani ritpate.
Thus learned men describe the births and activities of the unborn and inactive, which is undiscoverable even in the Vedic literatures. He is the Lord of the heart. Says the birth and activities of the soul and matter are very difficult to understand. So similarly, the birth and activities of the Lord are very confidential and very hard to understand. But they are understandable but as learned men have described them. So it's not easy to understand. As a matter of fact, the appearance and disappearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his different activities are all confidential, even to the Vedic literatures. Yet they are displayed by the Lord to bestow mercy upon the conditioned souls. So, this point is just explaining. In other words, it just explained here the subtleties between the subtleties between understanding the difference between the soul and the body, and then understanding God. And it's very, very difficult, especially to understand these verses 35 and 36. We'll just quickly finish this section, and then we'll go on to the end of this chapter. What 35 and 36 are actually describing, because it's describing here what happens when the illusion subsides, when you be situated in self-realization, when you no longer are under the misidentification with the body, then in that perfection, the living entity never becomes the same as the Lord, because there's an analogy that has been described here between the soul and the body and God and the universe. That God is neither the universe or the gross or subtle coverings of the universe, and the living entity is neither the gross or subtle coverings of the body. So there's a similarity being described. And then it was described how the living entity, when he understands that he's not the gross or subtle body, becomes situated in his real glory of self-realization. Now, his real glory is not that he becomes God. So although there's an analogy being described here that shows the similarities between the living entity and God in relationship to their transcendence to the outward covering, the living entity does not become God. So in the next two verses, this 35 and 36, the difference is going to be described. See, the learned describe the birth and activity of the unborn and inactive. He has birth, but they describe it, and it's mysterious. But the learned know it. And even the Vedas, you can become confused sometimes. It's very, very confidential about the Lord's position. Both the Lord and the living entity are essentially spiritual. That's the same. Therefore, both of them are eternal. That's the same. Neither of them has birth and death. That's the same. The difference is that the so-called births and disappearance of the Lord are unlike those of the living being. The living beings who take birth and then accept death are bound by the laws of material nature. But the so-called appearance and disappearance of the Lord are not actions of the material nature, but are demonstrations of the internal potency of the Lord. See, then it quotes Bhagavad Gita. His so-called birth and activities are transcendental. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvata. And simply by meditation on such activities, one can attain Brahman and become liberated. So the Supreme Lord's position is different. Yet they're different, and we have to meditate on those. It's basically, this is being explained. Now, I'm going to do 36. Sava idam vishvannamo galila srijatya vatyate na sajyate smin puteshu chanta hita atmatantra shadvagikam jigvati shadgunesha. So what is the difference between the Lord and the living entities? Although they are both spiritual and in the material world, the Lord is in the material world and God is in the living. What is the difference? The difference is explained in this verse. The Lord, whose activities are always spotless, is the master of the six senses and is fully omnipotent with six opulences. He creates the manifested universes, maintains them, and annihilates them without being in the least affected. He is within every living being and is always independent. So the living entity does not have these qualities. The prime difference between the Lord and the living entities, Prabhupada says in the purport, is that the Lord is the creator and the living entities are the created. So there's difference, and that difference is described. 37. Nachasya kaschin upanena dhatur avaiti jantu kumanisha uti namani rupani mano vachobi santavato natachayam vivagya.
foolish, the foolish with a poor fund of knowledge cannot know the transcendental nature of the forms, names, and activities of the Lord, who is playing like an actor in a drama. Nor can they express such things, neither in their speculation, nor in their words. So these verses we've been discussing are discussing how one can understand the Lord and understand his transcendental form, which is beyond this material world. So here it says, the purport Prabhupada, and, you know, elaborating the translation, no one can properly describe the transcendental nature of the absolute truth. Therefore, it is said that it is beyond the expression of mind and speech. Now, I took a quote. Prabhupada had one godbrother who was a great scholar, Srila Sridhar Maharaj, and I have this quote for him. It's very interesting. He says, it is impossible for the eyes to see the mind. It can have some connection with the mind only when the latter cares to mind it. So the eyes are not independent of the mind. You can't see without the interaction of the mind. So if it wants to actually observe anything, then it has to have connection with the mind. In a similar way, our connection with the absolute knowledge depends mainly on his sweet will. We must solely, in other words, we can only understand the absolute truth, just as the eye can only have connection or understanding of the mind with the help of the mind, because the mind is superior to the senses. So similarly, we can only understand the Supreme Lord with the help of the Supreme Lord, not independently. In a similar way, our connection with the absolute knowledge depends mainly on his sweet will. We must solely depend on his agent, or the spiritual master, through which he likes to distribute himself. So independently, we are not able to understand. We don't have the capacity to understand the absolute truth, which is inconceivably greater than us, and even inconceivably greater than our senses or mind. So we can only understand the absolute truth by his sweet will, and or how he likes to distribute himself. And he likes to distribute himself through his agent of distributing himself, and that's called the spiritual master. Another quote, all intelligent giants prove themselves but pygmies before the absolute omniscient omnipotence, who reserves the right not to give himself away. Another quote there. So Prabhupada in the purport discusses how there are two classes of materialists, the fruitive workers and the empiric philosophers, and both have different misconceptions about the absolute truth. That's there in the purport. Now, how to understand the absolute truth? That's discussed in the next verse. Saveda datu paravin parasya tarantavirasya ratangapane yomaya santatayanu vritya prajeta tatpara sarojagandham. Only those who render unreserved, uninterrupted, favorable service unto the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, who carries the wheel of the chariot in his hand, can know the creator of the universe in his full glory, power, and transcendence. So only by devotional service. And Prabhupada, by those who are rendering service unto him directly, under the direction of his beloved agent, are rendering service unto him favorably. Such favorable servitors are devotees, and by the grace of the Lord, they can enter into the mysterious regions of transcendence by the mercy of the Lord. But the mental speculators remain in darkness all the time,
as stated in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord guides the pure devotee through the path of realization due to their constant engagement in loving service of the Lord in spontaneous affection. That is the secret of entering into the kingdom of God. Fruitive activities and speculation, no qualification for entering. So as the Supreme Lord is so much, that analogy even intellectual giants prove themselves pygmies before the Lord. So he's so much beyond our conception mentally and sensually that he can only be understood by his mercy. And to attract his mercy, one has to render service. That's natural. If you have a relationship with someone, the relationship is with the Supreme Lord. He's our, so if we serve him, then he reciprocates. And how does he reciprocate? He reciprocates by giving us knowledge and understanding. And that's the verse that Prabhupada quoted from the Bhagavad Gita. Tesham satati yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. Dadami buddhi yogam tvam yena mamupiyanti te. For he worships me with great love and devotion. Dadami buddhi yogam tvam. I give him. So this is the, this is our system. This is our method of getting knowledge. Devotional service. And the reciprocation of Krishna to our service. He gives us knowledge and understanding. Text 39. I think we have time. We're going to go towards the end. We'll finish up the chapter. What's going to happen at the chat, we've answered five. Sutta Goswami has answered five of the questions so far. Now, the sixth question hasn't been answered. Now that when Krishna has left the planet, where will knowledge and religion be maintained? That hasn't been answered yet. So text 39. Ateha danya bhagavanta itam yadvasudeve kila lokanate kurvanti sarvatma kamatma bhavam nayatra bhuya parivarta ugra. Now Sutta Goswami, He's very much pleased with the inquiries by the sages of Namisharanya. And due to those inquiries, he's been able to explain so much about the position of Krishna and the process of devotional service. And now he's just explained how one could actually know the Supreme Lord in the previous verse, who render unreserved, uninterrupted, favorable service unto the lotus feet of Krishna, who carries the wheel of the chariot in his hand. Only then they can know the creator of the universe. The chariot, this is the name of Krishna, Ratangapani, Lord Krishna, who bears the hand of the wheel in his chariot. So only can know him, but bhajete, tatpada. My devotional service. So he's so pleased by these questions. And he said he would be pleased at the very beginning. Some prishya, what is that? Some rishta, some prashna. I'm satisfied completely by your perfect question. Prati puja, I worship you. So this is his mood. And here he says, only by making such inquiries in this world can one be successful and perfectly cognizant. For such inquiries invoke transcendental ecstatic love unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the proprietor of all the universes and guarantee 100% immunity from the dreadful repetition of birth and death. So only by, again, the question is, only by making such inquiries unto Vasudeva. It says here, Vasudeva Kila Lokanata, unto Vasudeva, unto the son of Vasudeva, Krishna, who's the all-complete proprietor of the universes. And such inquiries from him, kurvanti atmabhavam, give ecstasy to the soul. And not only do you give ecstasy to the soul, but they guarantee liberation, immunity. They guarantee immunity from the dreadful repetition of birth and death. So he praises these inquiries. Purport, the inquiries of the sages headed by Shonaka are herewith praised by Sutta Goswami on the merit of their transcendental nature. As already concluded, only the devotees can know him to a considerable extent, and no one else can know him. So the devotees are congratulated as being all successful. A 100% devotee of the Lord is immune to the dreadful material miseries of repeated birth and death. Okay. Now the next five verses... The next five verses will be on the position of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which it will be the answer to the sixth question of the sages of Namasranya. Maybe right now we can just quickly, go over the questions. Briefly, you know, what is the essence of the scriptures? Where will knowledge and religion be protected? No. What is the absolute ultimate good? What is the essence of the scriptures? So there was that description of Dharma, the Paro Dharma, which began in chapter 2, text 6. And there's a whole description about Dharma. And then the third question, for what purpose did Krishna appear? I think that was at the end of chapters 2. To reclaim those in the mode of goodness. And then there were the two questions about the avatars, about the Purusha avatars, which are described at the end of chapter 2. And then there was the question about the Leela avatars, which was described in chapter 3, which, by the way, is entitled Krishna is the Source of All Incarnations. And that ended with stating that Krishna is the source of all incarnations after the incarnations were listed. And then we just had a description of the Virat Rupa. And the question was answered whether there's a subsidiary point, whether that was an incarnation or not. And it described that just as the soul is different from the body, the Lord is different from his material manifestation. Simultaneously one and different, that was also discussed before. And then these nice points came right here about how to understand that, how to understand the Lord's transcendental form. So now we'll read these verses about, and we'll answer the sixth question. Let me actually go with in the first chapter now and read exactly what that sixth question was. It was the last verse of the first chapter. Bruhi yogeshpare krishne brahmanye dharma varmani swam krishna maduno pete dharma kam saranam gata. Since Sri Krishna, the absolute truth, the master of all mystic powers, has departed for his own abode, please tell us to whom the religious principles have now gone to shelter. So now we'll see how it's answered.
Uttama shloka charitam chakara bhagavan rishi nishrayasaya lokasya danya swastya yunam mahat.
Therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of God, and it is compiled by Srila Vyasadeva, the incarnation of God. It is meant for the ultimate good of all people, and it is all successful, all blissful, and all perfect. Mahat, swastyanam, mahat, all perfect, danyam, fully successful,
swastyayanam. It's all blissful purport. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu declared that Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless sound representation of all Vedic knowledge and history. There are selected histories of great devotees who are in direct contact with the personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of Lord Sri Krishna and is therefore non-different from him. Srimad Bhagavatam should be worshipped as respectfully as we worship the Lord. Thereby we can derive the ultimate blessings of the Lord through its careful and patient study. As God is all light, all bliss, all perfection, so is Srimad Bhagavatam. So Danyan Swasyayanam Mahat. That refers to the Bhagavatam, this Uttama Shloka Charitam. Compiled these activities of the Lord. We can have all transcendental light of the Supreme Brahman Sri Krishna from the recitation of Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, provided it is received through the medium of the transparent spiritual master. Lord Chaitanya's private secretary, Srila Sarup Damodar, advised all intending visitors who came to see the Lord at Puri to make a study of the Bhagavatam from the person Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is the self-realized, bona fide spiritual master, and through him, person Bhagavatam is a self-realized bona fide spiritual master, and through him only can one understand the lessons of Bhagavatam in order to receive the desired result. One can derive from the study of the Bhagavatam all benefits that are possible to be derived from the personal presence of the Lord. It carries with it all the transcendental blessings of Lord Sri Krishna that we can expect from his personal contact. So this is why we are studying. We're studying the Srimad Bhagavatam, not to just fix up our intellect, but to actually get the association and blessings of Sri Krishna. Because when he departed for his own abode, he returned in the form of this transcendental message. And that's why in our movement, Srila Prabhupada said books are the basis. And this is the whole story of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Or Vyasadeva, why he compiled it for Kali Yuga, to enlighten people. Okay, we'll continue. Taridam grahayamasa sutamatma vatambaram sarvavede tihasanam saram saram samudritam. Srila Vyasadeva delivered it to his son, who is the most respected among the self-realized. After extracting the cream of all Vedic literatures and histories of the universe. So just see the position of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Saram, saram, samudrityam. He's taken out the cream. Actually, it's saram, saram. The cream of the cream of all the histories of the universe. Prabhupada says, not only of this planet, but of millions of other planets within the universe. Sometimes the history of planets beyond the world appears to such men to be unbelievable. They do not know that different planets are not equal in all respects. Anyway, the history is here. Vedic literature is like the ocean, milk ocean of knowledge. Cream or butter is the most palatable essence of milk. And so is Srimad Bhagavatam, for it contains all palatable, instructive, and authentic versions of different activities of the Lord and his devotees. So it's the history of the Lord and his devotees, and it's not mythology, Prabhupada said. The great rishis like Vyas had no business putting some imaginary stories in their literatures. And finally, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord says, this is the last few sentences of the purport, that the purpose of all the Vedas is to know him, Lord Krishna. And Srimad Bhagavatam is Lord Sri Krishna himself in the form of recorded knowledge. It's Krishna in the form of recorded knowledge.
Therefore, it is the cream of all the Vedas, and it contains all historical facts of all times in relation with Sri Krishna. It is factually the essence of all histories. Because the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada quotes, Vaidaischa Sarvaham Eva Vedyo, Vedanta Vid, Eva Vid, Eva Vid, by all the Vedas I am to be known. Therefore, it is the cream of all the Vedas. Because the purpose of this world and the purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna. So what is actually happening in this world is a transformation of matter in contact with the living entities and a process to understand Krishna. That's the purpose of this world. So that's what real history is. And therefore, when we asked Srila Prabhupada, should the Gurukul students learn history? He said, not that chronology of nonsense, but let them study Mahabharata, the history of great men. Not that chronology of nonsense, not modern civilization where people are forgetful of God, and it's a history of how people are accruing sense gratification. But the ancient histories, and the histories on other planets, except for the degradation, the history of the degradation of Kali Yuga, the history is about people searching for God, because that was the purpose of life. That was the purpose of culture. All culture was centered on that. So previously, history, architecture was about God. Just like if you study ancient art, the best art, even in the Renaissance, the best architecture, it's all a history of God. St. Peter's Cathedral, the temples in India, Notre Dame Cathedral, even in America, the history was about the founding of America was the history of people who wanted religious freedom. So this is the essence of history. And as Kali Yuga progresses, we see how people forget God more and more, and the history is about creating things to help them forget God. I was just thinking of the internet. How, you know, Maya can just suck people into a whole world of illusion. And how also it's actually affects the devotees in that way too. Distracting them from God consciousness. Of course, anything can be used in Krishna's service. Okay, we'll go on.
Satu sam sravayamasa maharajam parikshitam. Prayopavishtam gangayam paritam paramarshavi.
Shukadev Goswami, the son of Vyasadev, in his turn delivered the Bhagavatam to the great Emperor Parikshit, who sat surrounded by sages on the bank of the Ganges, awaiting death without taking food or drink. So here, about the Bhagavatam, Vyas spoke it to Sukadev, who's delivering it to Emperor Parikshit. So Prabhupada says in the purport, all transcendental messages are received in the chain of disciplic succession. That's what's being described here. The disciplic succession is called parampara. So you have to hear, one should therefore receive the message of Bhagavatam from Suta Goswami or from his representative and not from any irrelevant interpreter. And here, he heard it at death. He heard, and this is what one should do at death. And of course, when Maharaj Prickett asked the question, what is the duty of a man about to die? Sukadeva Goswami appreciated it, because who is the man who's about to die? It's everyone. So this is actually the duty of every man. And even, Prabhupada points out in the purport, even Shankaracharya admitted that what he had preached in the flowery grammatical interpretations of the Vedanta could not help one at the time of death. At the critical hour of death, one must recite the name Govinda. So he said, Bhaja Govinda, Bhaja Govinda. You know this, what he said, Shankaracharya? Just worship Govinda. What will your grammar, he told his disciples at the end, what will your grammatical jugglery do at the time of death? And Sukadeva Goswami Prabhupada said, stated the same truth. Ante Narayana Smriti, he told Maharaj Prickett. At the end, you should remember Narayan. So this is the history.
And now this answers the sixth and final question definitively, as we'll see.
Krishne swadamo pagate dharma jnana divisaha kalo nashta jusha mesha paranarko danodita.
This Bhagavad Purana is as brilliant as the sun, and it has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. Persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in the age of Kali shall get light from this Purana. So, in the purport, Prabhupada describes why Krishna descends. He descends with knowledge. Yada yadahi dharmasya glanir bhavati bar. Whenever there's a discrepancy in religion, Krishna comes himself to give the principles of religion. Dharmanta sakshat bhagavat pranitam. The Mahajans, the great devotees, and Krishna, they dictate codes of religion. And what is real religion? Real religion means sambandhagyan. It means to know God, our relation with Him, and our duties and relationship with Him, and to know ultimately our destination after leaving the body. So that you can read Prabhupada's purport. Lord Krishna has the eternal dham or abode where he eternally enjoys himself with his eternal associates and paraphernalia. And he descends to the material world, and he descends for this purpose, to reclaim the fallen souls and to reestablish codes of religion which are directly enacted by him. So this is the purpose. Now, then Kali Yuga comes, where Prabhupada said in the Kali Yuga, the population is just a royal addition of the animals. They have nothing to do with spiritual knowledge or godly religious life. I think Prabhupada explains that the personality of God as Sri Krishna appeared before us just a little prior to the beginning of Kali Yuga. That was Dwarapa Yuga. And he returned to his eternal home practically at the commencement of Kali Yuga. While he was present, he exhibited everything by his different activities. He spoke the Bhagavad Gita specifically and eradicated all pretensions of religiosity. So it's explaining how when Krishna came, he came with knowledge and religion. Just the question is, when Krishna left with knowledge and religion, then where would knowledge and religion be maintained? So it's describing how when Krishna left, Kali Yuga began, and it appears the beginning of Kali Yuga that Krishna also took knowledge and religion. And prior to his departure from this material world, he empowered Vyasadeva through Narada to compile the messages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So when he left, to keep knowledge and religion in the world, because he was going now and he was the one that was presenting knowledge and religion, he empowered Vyasadeva. And thus both the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam are like torchbearers for the blind people of this age. In other words, if men in this age of Kali want to see the real light of life, they must take these two books only, and their aim of life will be fulfilled. Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary study of the Bhagavatam, and Srimad Bhagavatam is the summum bonum of life Lord Sri Krishna personified. We must therefore accept Srimad Bhagavatam as the direct representation of Lord Krishna. One who can see Srimad Bhagavatam can also see Lord Sri Krishna in person. They are identical. And this is what our experience is meant to be. Our experience is meant to be the proper transmission of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. And in that transmission is Krishna. And they're identical.
Tata kirtiyato vipra viparsha buri tejasa aham cha jagaman tatra Nevishtastaranugrahat Soham Vasrava Yushyami Yataditam Yatamati.
O learned Brahmins, now this is Sutta Goswami speaking. When Sukadeva Goswami recited Bhagavatam there in the presence of Emperor Parikshit, I heard him with rapt attention. And thus by his mercy I learned the Srimad Bhagavatam
from that great and powerful sage. Now I shall try to make you hear the very same thing as I learned it from him and as I have realized it. Purport. One can certainly see directly the presence of Lord Sri Krishna in the present pages of the Bhagavatam if one has heard it from a self-realized soul like Shukadeva Goswami. So we consider Prabhupada's purports this type of revelation. So Sutta Goswami, he realized it because he heard it from Sutta Goswami. He not only heard it, he realized it. Yata ditam, yata mati. And how did he hear it? He heard it with rapt attention, so Prabhupada explains. Sukadeva Goswami presented Bhagavatam as he heard it from his great father. And so also, Sutta Goswami is presenting Bhagavatam as he heard it from Shukadeva Goswami. Simple hearing is not all. One must realize the text with proper attention. The word Navishta means that Sutta Goswami drank the juice of Bhagavatam through his ears. So this is actually how we should hear it. It's just like when you're drinking something. You're not analyzing it. You're just relishing it. Of course, we should analyze and understand the Bhagavatam. But as we're analyzing and understanding it, and we hear it with rapt attention, we can actually come to a platform where we're actually relishing it within itself and relishing that message, just like Srila Prabhupada in the Nectar of Devotion when he's giving his own commentary on the process of devotional service called Shravanam, or hearing. Shravanam, or hearing. What he says is very interesting. He says, some people see in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna is speaking to Arjuna, but he says, I see a river of nectar flowing from the moon-like face of Krishna to Arjuna. So just like when you're drinking something that's very good, you're wrapped in attention on it. Imagine a very, very hot day, and someone gives you some wonderful ambrosial nectar drink. And you've been out and, you know, all day in the hot sun. So the word Navishta means that Sutta Goswami drank the juice of Bhagavatam through his ears. That is the real process of receiving Bhagavatam. One should hear with rapt attention from the real person. And then he can at once realize the presence of Lord Sri Krishna in every page. So we must hear with rapt attention. This is the process. The secret of knowing Bhagavatam is mentioned here. No one can give rapt attention who is not pure in mind. No one can be pure in mind who is not pure in action. No one can be pure in action who is not pure in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. So that discourages us, maybe. We can understand this in our own thing. We have to be pure in these things. We have to be pure in our eating. We have to be pure in our sleeping, fearing. Of course, mating, we're giving up. But there's another type of purity in terms of association with the opposite sex. So you can see there's a connection between one's life and one's ability to hear. And we're trying to cultivate this so that the transmission of knowledge and the reception of the receiving of that knowledge actually manifests. But don't be discouraged. But somehow or other, Prabhupada said, if someone hears with rapt attention from the right person, at the very beginning, one can assuredly see Lord Sri Krishna in person in the pages of the Bhagavatam. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the first canto, third chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled, Krishna is the Source of All Incarnations. Any questions? It's a nice presentation, huh, by Sutta Goswami answering that last question about the Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, we'll end here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.